This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanasan. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Friday the 25th of September, and it's the end of the week. It's gone to by so quickly. What are you planning for the weekend, Roshan?
Only the week has gone by so quickly, Lynn. It feels like the year has just flown by. We are at the end of September. We are at the end of the third quarter.
It's less than 100 days to the end of the year, you realize. We're now into the double digits.
Incredible. As long as we're moving faster through it, hopefully we get through this a lot faster than
just
that.
Just get the lost year behind us.
Yes, about the weekend ahead. I think family dinners and I've actually got a few food-related things that I'm planning out. I haven't fully fleshed out these ideas yet, but I know that I do want to. Oh, yes, this is what I'm doing, and this is going to sound super old, but I'm playing Bridge on Saturday evening with a few friends. Yes, that game that you're all thinking about right now, where four old people are sitting around trying to keep their brains stimulated as they go into old age. Yep, that's the exact game I'm playing. It's actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, okay, la, suits you, because the right game for how old you are, right?
Yes, my elderly stature.
Absolutely.
Great.
Okay, but in the meantime, we have a lot of fun things lined up for you this morning as we kind of ring in the end of the work week. Later on, after the 6:30 news, we're taking a look internationally. What's happening over in the US, where Mitch McConnell has promised an orderly transition of power? And in about 10 minutes, though, what are we talking about as well?
Ooh, in 10 minutes, we've got an interesting article, actually. The Rolling Stones released a piece on the 500 greatest albums of all time. Now, I'm not going to say I went through all 500, but I did go through the top 100, and there's some very interesting takes there. My question, though, is how relevant are albums today in the age of the streaming service? And also, don't forget, towards the end of the hour, we'll be taking a look at the local papers and portals with a look at, what's happened with the Anwar move. A lot of things are quiet there. A look forward to Sabah, as well as some unhappiness at UMNO.
All right. And if you want to weigh in on our conversations, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're going to be taking a look at why you should join us on the 5 a.m. bandwagon. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Superstition by Stevie Wonder. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, you know, I think a lot of us struggle to wake up early, particularly since COVID-19 has thrown some of our daily routines up into the air. But there is some argument for the idea of waking up extra early, even before you would normally wake up for work at, say, 6-7 o'clock, because it might give you a bit of a head start on the rest of your day. And it gives you that hour to yourself before the rest of the world starts waking up, right? And we're looking at an article from the Good News Network. And it's looking at how to wake up early and why perhaps waking up at 5 a.m. on a daily basis might be good for you.
Yeah, so this is actually an article from a year or two ago. And it's based on a conversation they had with Robin Sharma. And so I used to read Robin Sharma maybe like 6 years ago, 2013. Times when I was in university,
looking for the.
I don't know. I think it was cool already at that point. Reading Robin Sharma was ever cool. That's a good question to have in mind. But I couldn't. I was not a fan of his. I think his most famous book was The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. I was not a fan of those kind of stories. More of his. He had some videos. He had some podcasts, and he had some basically very. There was one book called The Greatness Guide. I know the title is all sorts of cliche, but it had some good tips in there in terms of personal development and building and all of that. And yes, I'm that kind of person. What I found really helpful from this was the idea of getting that 1 hour before the world gets in your way, right? Once you hit work or once the work day starts, it's very, very hard to get an hour for yourself. So he used to call this the holy hour, and he broke it up into three 20-minute increments, exercise, journaling, and just some form of mindfulness, whatever that means to you. And to some people, mindfulness could be in the journaling itself or the exercise itself. So basically 1 hour to kind of just do your own things. And it was very helpful. I think before university, especially during university times, when you start the school day, things kind of get haywire. Now, when I started the Morning Run, things became a bit different because the work day started when I was an intern at 6, that back then, but now the work day starts at 5. So waking up at 5 a.m. is no longer the thing. It's waking up at, 3 a.m. if you want to get that if you want to get that holy hour back. And to be fair, I have been trying it, and it's about a 50-50 success rate at this point. But it is very valuable. Now, whether people can do it and maintain a healthy sleep habit and sleep hygiene, that's, I think, a very, very, very important person in question to think about.
Yeah, and I think I don't discount the idea that having that time to yourself is really beneficial, because I've always been the kind of person that rolls out of bed, you know, just in time to get into the shower and then just leave the house. And a lot of the times I'm grouchy for a long period of time into my day. And I've been told that I can be quite scary in the mornings if I've woken up not that long ago. But on some days, particularly weekends, where I still wake up early because, you know, we're tuned to the morning run schedule. But nobody else is up yet. And I'll be awake at 6 o'clock, and I'll be cooking myself breakfast. I'll be sitting on my balcony, just throwing a toy for my dog or something. And that hour or two before people start waking up and asking me, okay, you know, what's your plan for the day, is really quite centering. And so I can see the attraction, but my problem is what you pointed out, Roshan. You know, it's getting that good how many hours of sleep beforehand, because it's very hard to break night owl habits, right? especially if you are the kind of person that is quite productive at night. So I'm reasonably productive after the sun goes down, and so when that happens, you know, your brain gets sucked into the productivity cycle, and you don't want to go to sleep because you don't want to stop what you're doing, and then it just kind of eats into how many hours you have left to actually shut your eyes.
So the key for you would be to then prevent that productivity cycle from kicking in at that time. You have to change the habit, right? Because you've allowed that to happen for years on end. But if you really want to maintain, so I in particular, because of certain health conditions and constraints, need to sleep is the most important thing for me, right? And I can do a few days of those crammed 4 or 5 hour nights, but generally speaking, I need to make sure that I get that 7 to 8 hour buffer, because long term, it doesn't work out for me, and it's never worked out. But getting that extra hour in the morning is very, very helpful in terms of the conditioning you want for the rest of the day, or at least the conditioning I want for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I liked the term that you used. You need to get that hour before the rest of the world gets in your way.
Yeah, that's it, right? Because we all work. And once we get to work, there's a lot of firefighting to be done throughout the day. And beyond work, there are family commitments, there are other things that could happen throughout the day. So I like having that hour before. And even if it is to, or even half an hour for that matter, even if it's just to give you that 20, 30 minutes from the time you wake up to do nothing but center yourself before you start getting ready for work, I think it's very, very helpful. And in fact, I'm sure based on previous WhatsApp comments and Twitter and comments from Twitter Jaya over the last few years on BFM, there are plenty of people out there with their own tips and tricks. So we always let us know what you think, right? We always want to know what your tips and tricks are. Do you wake up? Are you an early riser? Are you a night owl? How do you balance that with your other commitments? I mean, those are the key questions of life, right?
Absolutely. And I guess also, you know, if you are able to wake up in the early morning, what's your morning routine like? You know, what do you do that centers you? For me, sometimes it's just standing at the counter, not even sitting down, standing at my kitchen counter with a cup of coffee and staring into nothingness. And that for me is just kind of it's nice to have that moment of zen before the world kicks in.
Pre-morning run, my morning routine, actually the very, very important part was making fresh coffee. So I would grind coffee and I would do a filter pour over and all that jazz. I have a Chemex, and I used to do that. And that was very, very centering and very calming. And it really, really helped with the start of the day. It was a lot of fun. Now I don't have that same luxury. But it's also because I don't like drinking coffee within the first hour from waking up. So if I wake up at 3:30, I don't want to drink coffee until 4:30 a.m. Kind of just give that hour for my body's natural cortisol levels to rise and kind of take me through the day. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not trying to play a doctor on the radio waves here. So don't take my word as gospel.
But do let us know what you think, nevertheless. You know, what's your morning routine like? Are you able to be an early riser? You can WhatsApp us, 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages, and then we're taking a look at a somewhat debatable list, I understand it, of the 500 greatest albums of all time. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Eagle Birds by the Black Keys, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, music, everyone's favourite thing, but it's also very subjective. And the Rolling Stones has come out with the 500 greatest albums of all time. It's not the first time they've done this. It was originally published in 2003, had a slight update in 2012, but now they have revamped it. So they on the reason that tastes change, new genres emerge. So the history of music keeps getting rewritten, as they say. And so to do this, they received top 50 lists from more than 300 artists, producers, critics, music industry figures. They tabulated it and came out with a mammoth list of albums that have been put out in the last in the last several decades.
Yes, and I'd be lying if I said I went through all 500. It's an immense list. I did the most, I guess, what everyone would do. Go to the top 50 and check the list out, right? And now I think it's important to note here that when it comes to things like music, it is very subjective, right? And this is essentially Rolling Stone's list of the top 500. They've got their own, as you've mentioned, Lynn, the sample size that they've looked at. But there are some very, very popular albums here. I mean, we've got Off the Wall in the top 50. I think we've got Stevie Wonder's Inversions. Earlier we heard Superstition on the show. Amy Winehouse's Back to Black is here as well. Some really, really good stuff. Jimi Hendrix, Are You Experienced? I think Nas's Illmatic was here as well. Probably one of the best hip-hop albums of all time.
The Beatles' Abbey Road is at number 5.
Yes. And then, of course, there's the notorious B.I.G., Ready to Die, 1994, released by Bad Boy. So many good things here. But I guess one of the questions, and one thing they pointed out in their preamble into this this story that they put, is in 2003, they re-released this list for the first time again, re-released the list in 2003, because people were talking about the death of the album. And we're not talking about streaming services. We're talking about the age of iTunes back then. People could buy single songs. Well, it's how many years from 2003? 17? Is that right? That album is still alive and kicking. And but with streaming services, I really do wonder whether albums are as relevant as they used to be. Because we're seeing what I believe to be the rise of playlists. Lynn, what do you think?
Yeah, so I'm not particularly a pop music person. It's the running joke in amongst my friend group is that if it was written in the last 100 years, it's not likely to be something that I listen to. But I guess for me, what actually did get me into more modern music, and I laugh because, you know, last 100 years is for me modern music, but is Spotify and the ability to stream music as I went and have the shuffle playlist on. I don't necessarily know what I'm listening to. You have single songs, playlists, compilations from friends that you can just listen to because you trust their taste rather than how the artist actually laid it out in an album. So Spotify and streaming services like that has really changed the game. And you wonder how many more people still follow album drops like they used to, right? I know Taylor Swift dropped Folklore a short while ago. I have one or two friends who really were really excited and ramped up for Folklore and like analyzed the song lists and how, you know, the lyrics and how it was laid out. But, you know, was that the norm? Is that,
I think,
has that behavior changed? Is that the norm now?
So I think what you've really pointed out there is that distribution channels have changed, right? But excitement still exists. I mean, look at Kanye West, for example, right? I was a big fan of Kanye West back in the 2000s when he released his debut album. Before that, he was just a producer, mind you. So he released The College Dropout with the new workout plan and things like that. And I was like, oh, this guy has got flow. He's got great beats. And there was a sense of meaning to the lyrics that he was bringing out. He was bringing out so much emotion and meaning. And then he dropped The Late Registration. Now, that is probably one of my favorite albums of all time because of what I define as hip-hop. is that album, I think. It seemed to merge modern hip-hop with classical hip-hop, or at least the more traditional 90s hip-hop. And Kanye West changed after that, right? So he went to 808 Heartbreak. He had the Dark Twisted Fantasy, which is actually on the top 20 of this list. All great albums, I still believe, but quintessentially Kanye West is that album. And when you think about hip-hop, then you look at another top 20 or top 30 on this list is Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly. I mean, if you talk about Kanye, Kendrick Lamar is not the most appealing to all people, because his lyrics can be very crass and very hardcore, but his meaning behind the words, like, you want to talk about analysis, you can analyze these lyrics, you can kind of, especially in a time of now, I'm surprised he hasn't released an album to address what's going on in America right now. It is very, it's exciting, right? And again, whether it the drop means something depends on whether you follow the artist. And today, in the age of the omni-channel, Taylor Swift teased it on Instagram. And, you know, you've got that those different channels that you've got to make do with. And whether you're dropping it on Amazon Music or Apple Music or Spotify, access is easier than ever before. So maybe the album is about telling a story, and some albums do that.
Yes, so I think the last album that I listened to from start to finish was probably AC/DC's Back in Black, right? And
very cool.
And for me, it was it was less about the story as it was about the context and the flow of the music, right? How you feel as you go from the beginning of the album to the middle and all the way to the end. How they place it, you know, gives you that sense of it's like a good book in storytelling. You've got the build up to the climax and then the descent, right? So it to take music out of the albums that they were originally placed in, sometimes I think they do lose context. It's a little bit like how, you know, if you listen to Broadway and musicals, you can get now on Spotify, you can get the whole musical, all 2.5 hours of it streamed. And sometimes if you just pick out certain songs and you listen to it, you don't understand what's happening in the rest of the show. It actually takes you listening 2.5 hours to fully understand what it means.
And on that note, a shout out to Hamilton. I think one of my favorite stories on audio. But you know, speaking of that, when it comes to the storyline, one of my favorite albums in that regard is Iron Maiden's A Matter of Life and Death. And this was brought to me by my cousin, who's a very album purist, and he helped me understand the meaning and power behind the story that an album can tell. Now, not all albums are this way, right? But there are some artists that are actually, and bands that are storytellers, and it's quite fun to listen through the whole thing.
All right. Well, let us know what you think about this. Are albums still relevant in this age of streaming? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have the 6:30 news bulletin coming up for you. But first, Paradise by Sade, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Soma by The Strokes, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanisen. 6:39 a.m, Friday the 25th of September, and we've been having lots of interesting conversations this morning, but now we are turning our attention to what's been happening on the international front. And of course, there's lots of things heating up in the US. Now, most recently, it's been a conversation over whether or not the US will have an orderly transition of power if Donald Trump were to lose the November 3rd presidential election. Now, Republican leader Mitch McConnell has now said that there will be an orderly post-election transition after the president appeared to question the process's integrity.
You know, I can't help but laugh when I read this news, because only Donald Trump would say something like this, right? He was asked a simple question: would you commit to a peaceful transfer of power in the event that you lose the election in the November ballot? His reply is, we're going to have to see what happens. What kind of answer is that from the leader of the United States? You're the president. The United States has such widespread ramifications. Everything you say is being watched. The fact that Mitch McConnell has rebuked Donald Trump is a big deal. The fact that he had to come out and say, hey, listen, we're going to commit to a peaceful transition of power that has happened every 4 years. Mitt Romney, who just recently this week backed a possible nomination, backed the nominating of a candidate for the Supreme Court in favor of Trump, again came back to attack Trump, which is not an unfamiliar sight, saying that, you know, this peaceful transition of power is what separates the US from authoritarian regimes, right? And that has been their moral high ground for the last 200 years. That's what their moral high ground is. We are democracy. We are peaceful transition of power. Look at how great we are. Look at how amazing we do this. We're the best. We're the best. We're the best. That's what they've been saying, right?
Yeah. So and now with Donald Trump, he's been leading up to this refusal to commit to some kind of a peaceful transition of power, right? It started with him casting doubt over postal voting, casting doubt over the balloting system. And remember, I think it was a little while ago, he tweeted about it and Twitter put a fact check little tick on his tweet to say that, you know, this is not necessarily true. That was so embarrassing, right? For the president of the United States to have to be fact-checked by a social media platform. But whether or not this is going to come to pass, you know, if Donald Trump does not come out victorious at the November presidential election, I think at the end of the day, you will still see a peaceful transition of power, because this is the U.S. You know, as you've said, they have had 200 years to refine their system. And at the end of the day, the parties themselves, you know, on both sides of the aisle, are committed to upholding that democratic process when it comes to who sits in the White House.
You know, I would say that's debatable. I don't think that they've refined their system over the last 200 years. I think there are plenty of problems with it. I think that it's a moral high ground, right? Mm-hmm. The Republicans, it's freedom, right? It's freedom and democracy. This is what both sides of the aisle can agree on. And just read Mitt Romney's statement. He's a senator from Utah, and he was a former Republican presidential nominee against Barack Obama. This is the quote. Fundamental to democracy is the peaceful transition of power. Without that, there is Belarus. Yeah. And any suggestion that a president might not respect this constitutional guarantee is both unthinkable and unacceptable.
So you wonder how this is going to affect the electorate, whether or not it will actually turn Trump supporters against him. Because at the end of this is the individual rights and freedoms that are given to any American citizen, right? The fact that your vote counts. And if you cast a vote and the president decides that he's not going to respect that vote, or the president, you know, hints that he may not respect the outcome of the vote, that might be quite damaging.
Yeah. And I think it's a big deal that he even hinted to the fact that, you know, this is the sort of thing that is, he's broken so much precedent in the past, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's coming to, we're seeing so much change under him. I mean, he didn't even file his tax papers, right? So everyone's a bit uncertain. When we go into the election in November, people are a bit worried what's going to happen. Will he actually concede if it looks like he's going to lose? What happens if the coronavirus becomes bigger? Does he use this as a reason to delay elections for the first time ever? That's the uncertainties that come out, whether legitimate or not, because of the unprecedented nature of his presidency.
And to complicate the situation even further, you have ongoing civil unrest in the US, right? And overnight as well, we did have news reports that protests that erupted in Louisville, Kentucky, after the charging of police officers in the Breonna Taylor case, that has turned violent. I think two police officers have been injured as a result. And this was one of the landmark cases that everybody was watching, because we've had the Black Lives Matter movement gaining so much traction over the past couple of months, even with the coronavirus pandemic casting a shadow over everything. In the Breonna Taylor case, police were charged not with the killing of Breonna Taylor, but with, I think, wanton endangerment. Yep. By shooting into the flats of her neighbors, right? So that was seen as a slap in the face by many people in the Black community, who said that, you know, it means that if one of them were to get shot, or, you know, God forbid, then they're not going to get justice, because it just goes to show that for them, the system is broken.
Yeah, I think that's something that's going to be in more focus. And you know, it's important to protect cops, but it's more important to ensure that all people in that country, in your country, feel safe and protected by the very people who are supposed to protect you. I think that's the thing. No one is saying that being a cop is an easy job. It's a tough job, right? Mm-hmm. You're a frontliner, firefighters, frontliners. These are all tough jobs. And how we reward them, how we compensate them, that's a policy decision, but that they should still be held accountable based on the power that they have in their frontline positions.
Absolutely. Great. With great power comes great responsibility, I think.
Perfect
the saying
quote.
Goes. And now do let us know what you think about these conversations. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up for you, and then we're looking at the front pages of our papers and portals. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Mustang Sally by Wilson Pickett, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, we are bringing you the front pages of the newspapers as well as the lead stories on some of our online portals this morning. So, of course, there's lots of political headlines, seeing as we are heading into the Sabah state election tomorrow. The Star, though, has gone with Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim's claim. Questions aplenty. So this is on the back of the fact that constitutional experts are questioning Anwar's claim of having sufficient support to form a new government. And opinions are also varying amongst the MPs over who is over the kind of the political divide about the validity that he has a strong, formidable, convincing majority.
Yep, those were the words he used in the press conference itself. Actually, the Malaysian Reserve goes with a similar headline here. And I quite like this one. All quiet as Anwar's bid awaits royal audience. It really does describe what happened, right? So Wednesday, there was a lot of, press conference happening. Anwar has hit this. Yeah, okay, what's happening? And then Thursday was very quiet, right? Because even Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's address on Wednesday was targeted towards addressing the stimulus package extensions for wage subsidy and extension of Bantuan Prihatin Nasional. These were things that, I mean, 1 week off, 1 week out from the end of the month, these were things that I think were expected to be said. I mean, I think he made one or two lines there addressing the political stability that was provided. But, you know, we're hearing a lot of things from, I think, even things like from Dato' Sri Nasri Abdul Aziz, who said at least 10 UMNO lawmakers unhappy with Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's leadership. Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi alluded to respecting any UMNO MPs who support Anwar. So it is a uncertain time.
It certainly is. And I mean, Bersatu and UMNO have not exactly been the best of friends since February of this year. We have seen a lot of friction over the fact that UMNO currently has the largest number of MPs in Parliament, and yet they don't have the largest number of seats in Cabinet. Things like that have kind of thrown a spanner in the works of the two parties. But speaking of the new stimulus that the Prime Minister announced yesterday, I mean, the Star's front page actually is the picture here is empty roads and parking lots reflect businesses running on empty in Johor Bahru. And it just underscores the dire need that a lot of people in the country are facing. You know, we spoke to Jeffrey Goh of the SME Association, and he's based in Johor a couple of weeks ago. And that call was extremely dire because he basically said that, yeah, you know, the end of the loan moratorium and the wage subsidy program will help SMEs make a decision on whether or not to close. That's basically it. He'd seen McDonald's closing, and where on earth do you see a McDonald's closing?
Yeah, those are definitely some of the main concerns, right? And the stimulus package, I think, was particularly, it's timely because the wage subsidy was going to end at the end of the month, and the government has extended another, I think it's 6 months, but basically it's up to 200 employees and at 600 ringgit, and will help a lot of businesses keep going, especially the small, medium enterprises who, I mean, cash could be tight at this point. All the stimulus measures are here meant to kind of delay the impact so that people can hopefully get back on their feet. Because when the economy is stalled, like it was a few months ago, there is no income being generated or no spending being done. So that's why you need to basically halt things, right? You stop loan moratoriums, you push things back in the hopes that things kind of get back on their feet, and then maybe then you start putting the load back on the people. What's happening right now is the run-up to the Sabah elections, mm-hmm. right? And we're talking a little bit about this whole, the silence around the Anwar move. Notably, Barisan Nasional Chairman Dato' Sri Ahmad Zahid was absent from Gabungan Rakyat Sabah's main rally, where the presidents of the 7 component parties contesting the Sabah state polls were scheduled to speak. Dum, dum, dum. What does it mean? I don't know. Maybe we're all reading too much into it. Maybe we're reading too little into it. But you know what? I think Professor James Shin will have a thing or two to say in about an hour. He's the professor of Asian Studies at University of Tasmania and a regular commentator on Malaysian politics with us here.
There could be another reason for Zahid's absence, you know, because Tan Sri Anwar Musa has also been ordered to undergo self-quarantine after they saw some UMNO Supreme Council members test positive for COVID-19. So that might be another reason.
Yeah, we did hear that Sharil Hamdan he tweeted out the other day that he tested positive for COVID. Mm. That could have implications as well. I think that's a concern right now where everyone is on the top of their minds. All these people coming back from Sabah, should they go through a 2-week quarantine? I think this is going to be a concern because Is contact tracing being done there? Are people paying attention to social distancing measures? Let's be fair, during the Anwar Ibrahim press conference on Wednesday, there wasn't a lot of social distancing being observed there.
No.
So politicians really need to get their act together and really pay attention to this because, I mean, did you see the Emmys this week? They did it all virtually, the Emmy Award ceremony.
Yes.
It was entirely virtual, entirely...
New York Fashion Week did it virtually as well.
Everyone needs to get on this bandwagon and take it seriously because we don't want imported cases from Sabah to come in because people are campaigning for the next election.
Absolutely. And the New Straits Times front page is R not alert. So this is talking about the COVID-19 infectivity rates that
there
the health DG, Dr. Noor Hisham Abdullah, has highlighted as being extremely worrying in the country. So I guess the bottom line here is physical distance, practice good hygiene practices.
The importance is, remember, we're talking about stimulus packages, the economy. We don't want to go into another version of a stricter MCO and shut down the economy again. We don't want to burden the frontliners again. Maintain that flattening of the curve. We've done a really good job at it. We need to keep going at it and make sure that we... make sure that Dr. Noor Hisham's work has not gone to vain, right? The frontliners and him have done a lot of work. Let's make sure it doesn't go in vain.
Absolutely. So now we are heading into the 7 o'clock news bulletin. And then up next, we're going to be bringing you more business news and analysis. So be sure to stay tuned for that. But first, here to take you into the news, Can't Stand Losing You by The Police, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.